I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonderroot artist feature. I have the pleasure today of speaking with writer Alex Gallo Brown. Alex, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Floyd. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited about speaking with you. We've tried to get this done a few different times before, so I'm always happy to finally make that connection. Alex, I'm curious about your start as a writer. When did you really find, I guess, your stride as it relates to your career as a writer?
That's a great question. I think I first started writing poems when I was a senior in high school, maybe a junior in high school. I had the opportunity when I was in high school to work with an author named Sherman Alexie, who's kind of a well-known Native American author who lives in Seattle, where I'm from. And I think that was the moment, you know, he would give me poems, he would give me writing prompts when I really first started to imagine myself as a writer. Since then, that was, 10, 11 years ago, I've spent most of my life, I would say, most of my adult life identifying that way and exploring the craft in different ways. I write poetry, I write fiction, I write personal essays about my experiences, I write critical essays about books and film. So I think, language has always been a really crucial way for me to understand my experience and engage with other people's experiences and with the world of art. So as far as my stride, I don't know, maybe I haven't hit it yet, but, but it's very important to me.
In this social era that we're in, where everyone has access to distributing their thoughts, whether it's through a blog, whether it's through traditional social outlets like Facebook and Twitter, I'm curious about how you perceive your work as it relates to this ocean of written work that's already out there, or that's I guess growing by the day.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a great question. It's hard to say. I mean, mostly I'm really glad that there's been this kind of democratization of expression and language, and I think I don't think I'm any more, any smarter, any more insightful than anyone else. So I'm glad to see a lot of different kinds of expression out in the world. For me, I think there's some anxiety. There's anxiety within the literary community about what it is that you do with the work after you make it because of the kind of surfeit or flood of language that's out there. I don't know. I mean, you make it, and then what you do with it after you make it, I think is a whole other question, and I'm still kind of working that out. I self-published a book of poems last year, for me it was important not to have an online version, not to have an ebook. For me, it was really about creating an object and trying to disseminate that or distribute that to people who I thought would find it meaningful. For me, the poems were about grief, but my own experience with grief. So that was a pretty personal subject matter. And I hope that, I think a lot of the online chattering is pretty ephemeral and it's going to, isn't really meant to last. And I hope that the work that I put out there will last a little bit longer than that. But, you can't ever predict that, I guess. So.
What was the source of the grief, or what are the sources of the grief that gave you the impetus to create your last book of poems?
Yeah. I would say the number one source of grief that is confronted in that book is the grief for my father, who died about 5 years ago when I was 22. He died very suddenly, and it was, a big shock, obviously, to my family and to my community in Seattle. So a lot of the poems come out of that experience. But I was also interested in that book. The book is called The Language of Grief, and, I was interested in talking about grief as something that's more broad than just mourning a lost individual. You know, I think that we live in a society that's very fragmented, that, we lose people, we lose ourselves. I think that there's lots of ways to think about grief and talk about grief. And I try to get at some of those things in the book, I think.
Also, Alex, I wanted to get your perspective on what it was like to go through the process of self-publishing. I think a lot of people envision that to be a very glamorous experience in a way, because you're taking some ownership of what you're doing, which you are, but give some more perspective, I guess, in terms of maybe the process of that, or just maybe some of the challenges as well as some of the rewards of doing that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think we're still at a point with self-publishing where, at least within the literary community, it's not something that's really respected so highly. For me, it was important to do because, I had this manuscript of poems that were very important to me. And, the literary world, publishing industry, is kind of in a funny place right now where, like, you have all these small presses and, very small budgets, and there's a ton of work out there, and I just didn't really feel like putting my work into that kind of ecosystem. It just didn't feel right to me. I felt like those poems I had written in part out of a sense of collective loss for my specific community that I was a part of in Seattle, and so I felt like why not try to do it myself and then also reach out to those people I felt the poems would really be meaningful for. So what I did was I started a Kickstarter, and I asked people to donate money, and then, and the response was amazing. I think 90 people gave money. I raised about $3,000. I used that money to hire a woman to help me design the book, and then, a small publishing, a printing company in Washington State to print the book, and I think it came out beautifully. I also was able to give a reading in Seattle, kind of a release party. I think 100 people came. And so I think for me, that was, there are no reviews of the book out in any kind of literary magazines or anything, because self-published books just really, again, just don't get that respect right now. But for me, it was a very meaningful process. So I think it's just a matter of what you want. If you want credibility within the arts or the literary community, maybe self-publishing maybe it's different in the visual arts, isn't the way to go. But if you want to get your book out there and you want to kind of like share it with people who you think will really find meaning in it, I think it can be a great thing,
I'd love to get some perspective from you on the differences between the literary scenes, or I guess communities in Seattle, where you're from, as well as Atlanta, where you are now.
Sure. I've spent the last 5 years moving around. I haven't really lived in Seattle since the year after my dad died, which is about 5 years ago. I spent some time in New York. I spent a couple of years in Portland, Oregon. As far as the literary community here, I mean, I think it's small. It seems to be a part of a larger arts community, an art scene that to me feels very dynamic and just exciting. I think that both my girlfriend and I, since we've moved here, having found this art scene has been just immensely fruitful and nourishing for us, and so I've, in some ways it's exciting because I don't know a ton of writers in the city, but I know a lot of artists in the city. And I think that kind of cross-pollination, that kind of like, talking to dancers or painters or installation artists about the kind of stuff they're making can only be a positive thing for my own work, And I think, writing is really, and reading, they're solitary activities. I mean, you can do them anywhere, you can have a correspondence with a writer in Seattle or Houston or New York, like I do. And, that you can do that from anywhere. But I think being part of this art scene has really been what's been the most kind of exciting thing about being in Atlanta for us.
As a writer and as someone who is creating work for yourself, but also for the public in a certain context, I wonder, what do you read? What influences you? What other types of books or other authors do you look to just keep up with?
Sure. I mean, I think for me, it's really changes, you know, day to day, week to week. There are certain authors that who I really feel close to, who I think of as people that, you know, as authors, as, you know, their books are things that I really go back to. But I'm constantly picking up new stuff that, you know, that I might not be aware of right now. And then if somebody tells me about it tomorrow and I pick it up and all of a sudden it changes the whole way I'm thinking about something. You know, I just read, George Saunders' new collection of stories, 10th of December. And, I was really impressed by that. Zadie Smith is somebody who I've kind of been reading the last 6 months or so, who I really like. You know, but I do different, you know, I write poetry, I write fiction, I also write essays. So I'm constantly kind of shuttling between these different mediums. I really like reading critical essays. I think essays about politics, about, you know, about our economic system, about sociology, you know, all this kind of stuff, I think for me is I have to be reading all of it. And then if you get too caught up in the political stuff, I think it can really be detrimental. So, you know, I think it's good to go back to poems, back to fiction. So I'm constantly going back, you know, sort of my conscious, you know, intellectual brain, and then my, you know, that more sort of subterranean, subconscious place where art comes from. And you know, it's always a mix, but does that make sense?
Sure, that definitely makes sense. But I'm also curious about your process. What is your process when it comes to crafting poetry versus critical essays to short fiction? How is your approach different for each of those?
Sure. So I think, you know, when I'm writing critical essays or I'm writing something that's like purely kind of a rational, you know, expression of thought, like, that's a pretty straightforward process. You know, that's like the brain that I'm speaking to you with right now. Like, just, it's my waking self. I drink coffee, I sit down, I try to bang it out. With poetry and fiction, it's a little bit different, you know, because I don't think you can't be so caught up in that part of yourself. You have to, I think, be more expansive and more open. And so, you know, and you don't know where it's coming from, and you don't know what you're going to put down before you do. A lot of the time. So, you know, and to some extent, I think that's what gives me really the most delight is, you know, writing a poem, not really just kind of trusting yourself, letting your, all the different parts of yourself and your mind put things together. And then you go back 2 weeks later and you're like, wow, what the hell is that? You know, it doesn't, I wouldn't, you know. So I think to me, that's what's really exciting about writing. The real rational stuff, I think I do because I'm trying to think through a subject or a book or what have you. And that can be exciting in another way. But I would say that they, for me, they're all, each one kind of represents one aspect of myself as a writer, but they're very different.
So, Alex, at this point, I would love for you to read one of your works, and I'll let you introduce it and explain it and go from there.
Sure. Thank you, Floyd. This piece is called Grief, A Beautiful Place to Visit, and it's an essay I wrote probably about a year ago now, a little bit less than that, but it was recently accepted for publication by an online magazine called The Good Men Project, so I thought it would be appropriate to read. It's pretty self-explanatory. Here we go. In the first months after my father died, I took a lot of baths. I also took the dog on a lot of walks, which must have surprised him since he was used to receiving only intermittent attention from me when I was home. We had a daily routine in those months, also unusual, since I despised routines. Most mornings I took him to the coffee stand at the end of my parents' block, exchanged pleasantries with whatever college-age barista happened to be working that day, nabbed a biscuit for him and a very strong, very short Americano for me, and then descended into the ravine, a subterranean network of parks and trails neighboring my childhood home. While we walked, I listened to music through headphones, singing out loud to myself, making up lyrics to go along with the melodies. Other times, I just howled at the sky. I never got strange looks from anybody, or if I did, I never noticed. I was 22 when my father died. It happened suddenly when I was a senior in college 3,000 miles away from home. The day he died, I flew back to be with my mom and younger brother, staying nearly a year. When I think about grief, it is to those early days with the dog and the coffee and the music and the park that my mind usually leaps. Of course, more than 5 years later, I am still grieving. The grief has never left. My dad was the most important person in my life when he died. He wrote professionally for magazines while I had written from a young age. More importantly, though, we shared a sensibility, an outlook on life, as well as a recognizable physiognomy. There were differences, too, of course, many of which were harder to reconcile when he was alive than they are now that he is dead. But we were always close. After he died, I did not read any books about grief. I did not attend grief counseling, did not take up yoga or meditation. There was nothing wrong with those methods of coping. I thought, almost literally, whatever got you through the day. It was just at that time those strategies of dealing appealed to me hardly at all. What I wanted, I think, other than to have him back, was connection with other consciousnesses, release from the strictures of my own overwhelming pain. I wanted nothing less than the dissolution of myself. I found this quiescence almost solely through art, music, poetry, film, even stand-up comedy. Nothing but art in those months, not conversations with loved ones, not family traditions, not athletic activity, not alcohol, not thought, adequately relieved my pain. Nothing but art made me feel revived again. I had always loved art and literature. I wanted to be a writer. In those months after my father died, though, my heart felt primed to surge. In moments I was so joyful, everything sang. That was, in a certain way, the most sacred time I have ever known. For a little while, I did not think about friends, or money, or ambition, or career. I did not consider society, or politics, culture, or history. It was a purely selfish time for a little while, wandering alone through the veins of my grief. Now 5 years have passed. The dog has died. I no longer live at home. In time, I went back to college and graduated. I began a romantic relationship that endures. I worked various jobs with varying degrees of success. The sacredness for me turned out to have an expiration date. Not the sacredness of life, which endures despite our action or intent, but the sacredness of that kind of grief, wandering alone through an underground terrain. There can be value to such travel, I think, to such wandering, but only if you learn something there about how to construct a healthy home. Grief deeply felt can be a beautiful place to visit. Stay there too long, though, and you risk inhabiting purgatory permanently, treading some middle ground between life and death. The grief never left, but then neither has my dad. I carry him in my heart, my genes, my face, wherever I go. I still occasionally suffer periods of malaise and disuse. There is a wound in me that may never close. But it is also true that I have learned to care about the world again. Society, culture, politics, history, friends, money, career, ambition. Art has not faded from this life I lead. Indeed, it remains as vital as it has always been. But no longer either does it serve as my life's exclusive feature. Just as important to me is that I am useful to other people. And I am again, at least to a few.
Alex Gallo Brown, thank you for sharing your perspective, sharing your work. Let all of our listeners know how they can get in contact with you and learn more about you and your work.
Sure. Thank you, Floyd. And I just want to say I really appreciate you having me. It's always a pleasure to see you. I have a website. It's www.alexgallobrown.com, no hyphen. And there's an email address on there. You can get in touch with me if you need to. But yeah, thanks again, Floyd.
Alex, thank you. It was a pleasure.